2, The Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen. And check out Dr. Oz and Dr. Roizen's website, youbeauty.com. Here are Joe Galewski, Dr. Deb Lonser, and of course, Dr. Michael Roizen, MD.
Well, thank you for listening today, the passionate radio show that helps you take control of your genes to become the world expert on your body. It's you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Mike Roizen, the Chief Wellness Officer at the Cleveland Clinic. I'm Joe Galewski. To reach our show here today, you know how to do that on the phone. It's 877-711-5211, 877-711-5211, or udocs@gmail.com, Y-O-U-D-O-C-S. @gmail.com. In this hour, 20 after the hour, Dr. Gary Ginsberg. Just an amazing plant explosion earlier in Texas, and he has some things to say about that. Could that explosion of that fertilizer plant been prevented? That's one of his top stories this week. And Dr. G will talk about the greenest building in the world, where that is, and what does it mean to be the greenest building in the world? How about the straight talk from the docs at 34 past the hour. What are the topics today?
Well, we have two wonderful topics. One is on a new way of closing skin and even doing skin grafts and other constructions. It's a needle that is an alive needle, actually absorbs water, and that's all it takes is you put the needle in, it absorbs water, and the skin sticks together. We'll learn about that. And the other one, of course, is a study on dysmorphic people, people who think of themselves as having funny bodies or not ideal bodies, and what happens with them. And so it is a very interesting subject, and should you consider surgery if you have that?
Straight talk from the docs with Dr. Arthur Perry. At 34 past the hour. Now, here's an email. Of course, your email questions, Dr. Mike's answers at udocs@gmail.com, youdocs@gmail.com. This is from Angie. I like organic tofu and edamame beans, but they're so controversial. Cleveland Clinic and some others on the Dr. Oz show say it's healthy, but so many others say it causes hormonal issues. What's your answer?
Well, the answer is that each soybean or bean product, each legume, has some estrogenic compounds, but it's got so many that some contradict the others. That is, some are negative and some are positive for estrogen. That is, some occupy the receptor and have less effect than the normal ones that would occupy the receptor. So it's very variable. So the message is, we don't know whether it is, if you will, likely or specifically for any one person to be good or bad. It could be good. And the large-scale studies have shown it to have no effect at all. That is, they looked at people who ate 50 grams of soybeans. That's a lot, a day, every day, for, I don't know, several years. This was in a study in Japan of people eating edamame and other soy products, and they found no ill effect from it.
Well, and if I can just add, edamame and whole sources of soy are really good, but it's the processed versions of the soy that actually you're at the greatest risk of any kind of health problems from. So that's, you can find soy in so many things like soy isolate and energy bars, a lot of the soy burgers. So you want to avoid processed soy foods and stick more with the whole sources.
If you eat soybeans every day for a long period of time, aren't you going to get tired of it? Don't you get tired of everything if you eat it so much?
Joe, I think you would get tired of it, but they can eat them in various ways. And some people, you know, I could eat a chopped salad probably every day of my life. I love chopped salads with balsamic vinegar on them. And I love salmon burgers. And I've never tried it every day without exception, but I'll bet I could eat those two foods almost every day without getting bored of them. But so people in Japan eat edamame like you and I eat peanuts, or like, well, I don't know if you eat peanuts, and I don't eat peanuts that much anymore, but I mean, it is, they eat it as a appetizer, if you will, at the start of a meal, and they just eat a lot of them.
Well, it seems that you said 50 grams of soybeans every day.
And I know that...
That is a lot, isn't it?
Yes,
that's
it
what
is.
That's what they were doing. These women were mainly on that, and they looked at them for breast cancer risk, and they looked at the ones who had breast cancer and whether they had recurrences, et cetera, and they compared it to a group that didn't eat any, and it was a wonderful study. And showed no adverse effect, no beneficial effect either.
And I know that the dietitian at the Wellness Institute, Kristen Kirkpatrick, she actually has been on the Dr. Oz show to answer questions about soy, and she recommends to patients here to eat 1 to 2 servings of soy a day.
No, the way you said it, I mean, soybeans, I can understand versions, different ways of eating soybeans. I just, soybeans every day. 50 grams a day, every day, soybeans. Not just, you know, like you said, different variations of variety.
It's a staple of the Japanese diet, apparently.
And they're much healthier than we are.
Well, I know that. I know that for sure. There's a government study that ties ginkgo to cancer. Are you believing that?
Well, this is an interesting study. It was done in a extract of ginkgo. It was in mice and rats, so two different species, but both rodents. And they found increased incidence of liver and some other cancers. And so they put out a warning, look, there's no benefit of ginkgo. We haven't seen any benefit in the randomized controlled trials except for peripheral vascular disease, a very small subset. And then there are things that do equally as much better than ginkgo. And so there is a risk, so maybe we should say no ginkgo. And the makers of ginkgo said, wait a second, this is rodent study. There's never been this demonstrated association in humans, and they think there's a lot more benefit in humans than the FDA is willing to admit. So they said, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. That extract may not have anything to do with the normal ginkgo biloba that humans take in, so don't throw it out. Our bottom line is we think that at best it's a zero and may have toxicity, so I don't know of anyone who should take this for beneficial effect.
Talk about chelation therapy, what it is, and then what are the benefits of that?
Well, chelation therapy is essentially trying to bind something in your body and take it out. It's giving you an intravenous infusion of something that binds it. It was originally used for lead and heavy metals. Does work for that, so we use it here at the Cleveland Clinic for people who have mercury poisoning if they've got high enough levels. It's very rarely used routinely. There was question of, would it benefit people with cardiac disease? That's why this national study was done, and there were a lot of problems with the study. It's very hard to do a blinded study when you're getting something like, an infusion every day, or infusion 2 or 3 times a week, etc. But in fact, the statement was the data are that, in fact, this appears in the randomized controlled trial that wasn't very randomized and wasn't blinded. So there are problems with the study, but it is a study that showed that it did decrease. There were 1,700 people, and they were heart attack patients older than 40. They underwent 40 chelation infusions. They had 18% less cardiovascular events in the 5-year follow-up. So the question is this good? And the answer is 18% is 18%. You probably get about 40% less if you just walk 10,000 steps a day, and another 30% less if you eat plant-based diet and get optimal medical management of your things. So this does add something, but not as huge as, for example, walking would. So the answer is, yes, this adds something. The critics aren't convinced. They were prejudiced because of the claim that this diverts patients away from what we know works. I think this is a adjunct and not a primary therapy, but it is very useful.
What's toxic? What's not next? You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio MD. Stay well.
Hi, this is Melanie Cole, show host here at Radio MD and a mother of two. I want parents to know about Great Start Life Insurance offered by Guarantee Trust Life Insurance Company. Great Start ensures the future insurability of your children. Now, what does that mean? Too often, people will get an illness or an injury at some point in their lives that afterwards can preclude them from receiving life insurance, and that can cause a lot of problems. But by insuring your children now with the Great Start Plan, the insurance that grows with your children, they'll already be insured regardless of future illness or injury. Find out all about the great benefits of the Great Start Plan. Go to GreatStartGTL.com and see for yourself why Great Start is, well, a great start for your kids. Peace of mind at GreatStartGTL.com. That's GreatStartGTL.com. For the Great Start Plan, go to GreatStartGTL.com.
Plan not available in all states. Life insurance underwritten by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company, Glenview, Illinois.
Hi, I'm Dr. Regina Benjamin, U.S. Surgeon General. As a family doctor, I've seen the terrible impact of a premature birth. Losing a baby is one of the hardest things a family can go through. As Surgeon General, I see the toll that premature births have on our nation. It can cause lifelong disabilities. It is the leading cause of death in newborns. And our country has one of the highest rates of preterm birth in the world. We must do better. Hospitals need to ensure that babies are delivered early, only when medically necessary. We need research to find the causes of premature birth and research to find new ways to prevent it. Couples need to learn the risk of premature birth and what they can do to have a full-term baby, such as getting a preconception checkup. Remember, 40 weeks is a full-term pregnancy, and every week of pregnancy counts. Let's work together for stronger, healthier babies.
I am a face of influenza.
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 We all are faces of influenza.
I'm a mom. And I'm a face of influenza.
Health officials now recommend everyone 6 months of age and older get immunized against influenza this
and every year.
Vaccination is safe and is the best way to help protect yourself and your family from contracting and spreading the flu.
We all are faces of influenza.
See your healthcare provider about getting immunized. The American Lung Association urges everyone 6 months of age and older, and we mean everyone, to get vaccinated. Visit facesofinfluenza.org. Influenza is serious. So are we. Get vaccinated.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. October 8th through the 14th is National Fire Prevention Week, a great time to brush up on fire safety skills. We've all heard of stop, drop, and roll, but there's also the first up, last out rule. This method was developed after studies reveal that children don't always wake up when a fire alarm sounds. Even if they do, they're often disoriented and confused by the noise and commotion. Under these circumstances, children may decide it's safer to hide under the bed or in a closet than venture out into the darkness and smoke. First up, last out aims to avoid that situation. When a smoke alarm goes off, the first person up, usually an adult, is responsible for finding and ushering everyone out of the house. So while a working smoke detector more than doubles your chance of surviving a fire, it is also important to ensure that no one gets left behind. And for more information on children's health and safety, visit www.aap.org. With a Minute for Kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
If you've missed a show, the full audio library is at RadioMD.com. And now back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Don't forget our show weekly, brought to you by YouBeauty.com and Morning and Night Multivitamins. Time for What's Toxic and What's Not with Dr. Gary Ginsberg. His part of the show every week, and join us on the show at udocs@gmail.com. Today we'll talk about how much a drink can cause a development in your baby's brain to be underdeveloped, and is there a mold carcinogen that could be a risk to our corn products? The greenest building in the world is in a major city. Where is that, and what is the greenest building in the world? And more on the West Texas explosion earlier in the week. That was just horrific as well. Dr. Mike, what do you like? What's your favorite story this week with Dr. Harrigan?
I think the one is, what can you do to prevent the West Texas explosion? And then the next one is the one on the corn and alpha toxin.
Okay, let's start with Texas.
You guys don't want to talk about a toxicologist's favorite topic, which is alcohol, the one toxic chemical that we all take in as a self-experiment. I mean, us toxicologists go to meetings and we might have...
I know that one already. Go to the others.
I want to talk about that one.
Okay. Anyway, West Texas would be in the headlines still today if it wasn't for the events in Boston, but they're both homeland security issues. And these large... this was a fertilizer plant, but whether it's a fertilizer plant or whether it's a chemical manufacturing plant, any large plant that has dangerous explosive chemicals or toxic chemicals in large quantities, that is near homes, that is near schools, that's a high vulnerability, a highly sensitive target site. Could be a site for terrorists to go after, or just an accident could do a lot of damage. And so you want to have those sites really oversighted properly by the authorities, and you want to have, of course, the industrial people running it. You want to have those people being really good, careful citizens and taking care of their due diligence. And unfortunately, I don't want to say there's a widespread laxness, but there is not a lot of oversight of these places. There was a bill in Congress in 2009 that the fertilizer industry spent millions on to defeat, which would have put more controls on the fertilizer industry, as well as some of these other chemical plants. Right now, since since September 11th, we have some fairly loose self-reporting kinds of things that these companies have to do, these high vulnerability companies. So, for example, they have to submit a risk management plan or an RMP. The RMP for this facility that blew up said that it didn't have any explosive materials on site. It just had some ammonia gas, which, if released, wouldn't harm anybody. So you can see how they soft sell the risks at their facility. And, you know, this facility had ammonium nitrate, large amounts of ammonium nitrate, highly explosive material, so much so that when the fire got to the tank with ammonium nitrate, it blew to the point that there was a 2.1 on the Richter scale result. That was the force of this explosion. It was so explosive that the vibration, when it went through the town, people had internal body organ damage and concussions from the vibration going through their bodies.
Fertilizer in itself is very, very combustible, isn't it?
And it's combustible. Yeah, that's the thing that Timothy McVeigh parked outside of the Oklahoma City building that when he ignited it, brought down the whole building. So fertilizer plants, large amounts of fertilizer, are very explosive, are very combustible. And then you put on top of that, a large amount of this ammonium nitrate liquid, and, you've got a tinderbox that's ready to blow a hole.
So what should you do if you live near one of these? Is the answer move away? Is the answer...
Given how there is right now not enough federal or local policing of these facilities, and hopefully this will change the tenor in Congress about making that possible, you might want to, when you buy a house or a site of school... You might want to think about the hazards and the terrorist hazards that could be in your neighborhood. What targets are there? What could do a lot of damage? And usually the inventories for a chemical plant in your neighborhood, the inventories and the releases from these places are online. You can find that out.
Okay. The other story that Dr. Mike wanted to hear about was the corn products story, and maybe a mold carcinogen could affect the corn products.
Yeah. Right. Well, we think about aflatoxin as mostly a problem endemic to China, where the liver cancer rates are higher. And it's a problem, though, in the southern United States as well from time to time, or it can be. And that's related to there being warm, really warm, damp conditions, grains that are not properly stored, or drought conditions. And last year's drought in the south central U.S., really has ramped up the levels of aflatoxin in last year's corn crop, so much so that there were parts of the crop that they couldn't sell, they couldn't use. Now, if aflatoxin is in grain, the level, it has to be below 20 parts per billion before that grain can be used for human consumption. That's a pretty low amount, pretty safe. At the level that they could put into animal feed, 10 times higher, 300 parts per billion. So what they'll tend to do is they'll mix good, clean grain with the aflatoxin moldy grain to try to get the levels down so it could be used for, say, human consumption or animal feed. They couldn't do that. The levels were so high last year, they couldn't mix it all out, so they still have leftover grain for this year. And with that, they've got leftover mold spores in their silos, which promises to breed another aflatoxin type of year if the weather conditions don't cooperate, if it's similar drought and hot weather. So at any rate, the problem, as I see it, is, you know, the number one vulnerability would be the dairy supply, because aflatoxin does get into cow's milk, and normally they're very careful what they feed dairy cows in terms of aflatoxin levels. But that's something that's going to have to be tightly monitored by FDA and by the whole dairy
industry. Is any of it safe? In other words, doesn't this aflatoxin stay in your body and stay in your liver for a long period of time?
Well, it is cleared, but it's a carcinogen that can damage DNA. So the less the better with this. So the quote-unquote safe level for human food is 20 parts per billion. That is a compromise in terms of zero would be better. Aflatoxin is one of those natural carcinogens that it's a battle to try to keep the levels down. You know, we've talked on the show about moldy peanut butter and how to make sure that you don't have mold growing in your peanut butter. That could lead to aflatoxin exposure in the home. But no, this is something that the average person is not going to be able to do anything about. This is something that has to be properly monitored by the agricultural, the USDA, and the FDA authorities to make sure that the leftover aflatoxin from last year does not find its way into the human food chain.
1 minute to go, Dr. G. You got to tell us where the greenest building in the world is.
Seattle. Seattle's Earth Day present to the country and to the world is a building of a new building. It's an office building. Self-composting toilets, all that's in an office. Well, think about this. Composting toilets in an office building where only one cup of water is needed to flush the toilet. That's how green it is. Wow. All the water on the roof is reused for, say, flushing of toilets and gray water use. Solar energy. So, you know, waste not, want not. And for this Earth Day, I would say use this building in Seattle as your mantra to the Earth of waste not, want not. Everything that you can collect for energy, can collect for water. Let's look at ways to save all those resources and save the planet.
Dr. Gary Ginsberg, What's Toxic and What's Not. His website is whatstoxic.com. Find things that are, find things that aren't. You may be surprised by some of that. Udocs@gmail.com, Youdocs@gmail.com is our email address. Stand by for Straight Talk from the Docs with Dr. Arthur Perry. Stopping in with Dr. Mike and Dr. Mike's Relationship of the Week before the end of this hour. This is You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen on Radio MD. Thanks for listening and stay well.
Are you always looking for places to stop and rest because you're short of breath, wheezing, or coughing? Who wants to live like that? See your doctor for a simple breathing test to find out if it's COPD, a serious lung disease. With treatment, soon you could be living more and stopping less. Visit copd.nhlbi.nih.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Did you know only about 3% of the CEOs of Fortune 500 companies are women?
And of the 18,000 police chiefs in America, less than 2% are women.
So it's no wonder that only 1 in 5 girls believes she has what it takes to lead.
But did you know?
We can change that.
The time you spend with a girl now,
the words you say to her today,
can give her the courage, confidence, and character to become a leader tomorrow.
So speak up.
Get involved.
Nurture her potential.
Share your experience.
Invest your resources.
Did you know?
Together, we can get her there.
Get started today. Visit togetherthere.org.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. The U.S. is experiencing an increase in the number of cases of whooping cough. This is a serious illness caused by pertussis bacteria. It often starts with what seems like a common cold. Then, especially for toddlers, the cough worsens and leads to the characteristic whoop sound on inhaling. During this phase of the illness, which usually lasts more than 2 weeks, the child can get short of breath and the skin around the mouth may turn blue. Older children may cough so hard they vomit. The illness can be particularly deadly for infants who can develop complications such as pneumonia and seizures. Whooping cough is highly contagious and can spread to children who have not been vaccinated. The best way to prevent this dangerous illness is to be sure your child received all doses of the pertussis vaccine. This is usually given as the DTaP vaccine. And for more information on preventing whooping cough, visit www.cisp.org. With a Minute for Kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
I didn't think it was anything.
I had pain in my abdomen. It just wouldn't go away.
I was spotting, but I had already gone through menopause.
These symptoms may be nothing, but they could be early warning signs of a gynecologic cancer, such as cervical, ovarian, or uterine cancer.
Seeing my doctor probably saved my life.
Warning signs are not the same for everyone. If you think something's wrong, see your doctor. Ask about gynecologic cancer. Call 1-800-CDC-INFO for more information. A message from the Inside Knowledge Campaign and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This is Torticure, and it's more than just a bike ride. It's a celebration. It's where every turn of the pedal helps stop diabetes. Where cyclists of all levels come together to make a difference, to raise money, and to raise hope. It's the ride of your life. It's Torticure. Register today at diabetes.org/tour. That's diabetes.org/tour.
I can solve difficult problems for a Fortune 500 company.
I can run a successful business.
I can put my military experience to work for your company.
I can manage your home improvements.
I can publicize a message.
I can teach your children.
But I can't put my skills to work for your organization
if I'm not given the opportunity.
Nearly 50 million Americans have disabilities. Capitalize on their talents with employment practices that benefit everyone. Learn more at whatcanyoudocampaign.org.
Hi, I'm Olympic gold medalist Sean Johnson. I want to make sure you know about the March of Dimes March for Babies. This walk is really special to me. I was born with an Apgar score of 0, which is not an ideal way to start. Every day, babies start life the same way, with the odds stacked against them. Their first steps are made possible by ours, all of ours. Take the first step at marchforbabies.org. Let's walk together for stronger, healthier babies.
And now back to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. And now joining Drs. Roizen and Lonzer is renowned plastic surgeon, Dr. Arthur Perry.
And Dr. Perry, there is a new way of healing wounds or sewing wounds shut. Right? Totally
yep,
new generation. We started with old thread way back in my era. And then eventually got to, what, staples next? And then some super Durabond glue. And now what is it? Back to suture?
Well, you know, Mike, there's the coolest new thing was published last week. And now we're a few years away from this one because this is basic science. It was in the journal Nature. And, you know, when something's published there, that's not considered a clinical journal. It's kind of a real idea journal. And but this is the... I found this really fascinating. So the guys at Harvard Medical School at the Brigham and Women's Hospital have come up with this new way to attach wounds together, to sew them together, a new way to attach skin grafts, and there are lots of different applications of this. And
they actually got their idea from this parasite, some parasitic worm. I'm sure you know this one, Mike. Pomphorhynchus laevis. You know that one, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know
that worm. Goes wounds shut. Yeah. It goes over dead people and closes the holes.
Well, it's a spiny-headed worm. And what it does is it's a parasite that attaches by drilling its little tentacles into the host. And when the tentacles are in the host, the tentacles swell and they lock it in place. So these very bright guys at Harvard, they made a synthetic version of the tentacle of this worm, and they embedded it into this material. And lo and behold, it's a like an adhesive type of thing. So I guess the way to look at it, it's sort of like Velcro, Mike. Look at Velcro. There's all these little tiny projections. Well, if they're really, really small, and when you, instead of Velcroing and pushing a male and female end together like Velcro has, you don't need the female end. This male part pushes onto the wound and engages by swelling. It's really very cool. So they made this thing.
Wait, what do you mean they made this thing?
Well, they made this adhesive. It's a type of adhesive.
Oh, it's not actually suture material.
No, not at all. It's much simpler in concept.
It's like this Velcro stuff, and that
right.
They made it. And now how do they get that Velcro to stick on the skin? Do they have adhesive on the back?
No. They're needles. They're micro needles. And when they get into the tissue, they swell and embed and engage.
So think of this now. It's double-sided kind of, it's kind of like double-sided needles?
Nope.
Wait, there's
one-sided.
That one-sided.
So, all right, think of a piece of Velcro. All right.
I got it.
When you have Velcro, all right, you got the female and the male end. The male end of the Velcro is what we're talking about here. You don't need the female. Females can go home here. Don't need.
Or maybe you
don't
have the female
that.
End and the male end can go home.
No, it doesn't work. Doesn't work, Bridget. So it's the male end. It's the needle that embeds into the wound and engages it. So in this case,
you put it across the two ends of the wound and bring them together.
Yes, that's right. So let's say you pull a wound together, and then you take this little piece of tape with these micro needles. You're holding the wound together, and you push that onto the skin, and it engages the skin and holds it in place. The reason they think it's...
I'll bet that's more expensive than the Dermabond.
Well, Dermabond's not cheap. Dermabond is $30 for one little thing of Dermabond, which closes about a 4-inch incision. So it's certainly not cheap. And stitches aren't cheap either. They're about $10 to $15 for that same length of stitch. So none of this is cheap. The advantage to this one, though, is that all those other techniques, stitches and staples, create holes. And under the microscope, those holes are actually fairly large, and those holes, bacteria can penetrate. This one, the spikes swell around the holes and plug them up. So they've documented that bacteria cannot penetrate. So here you have, it's really a very cool thing. And I can tell you, it's going to take them about 2 to 3 years, as you know, to turn this into a clinical product. But it's going to be a pretty big thing. And they can also embed drugs into this system. So the drugs can actually be injected through these microneedles. So like an antibiotic, for instance.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So that gets my vote for the best new product of the week, maybe the year.
Mine too.
I guess I'll give mine too.
So, all right. But
now,
not yet a commercial product.
Have they given you a price of it?
No. This is basic science. This is, in fact, the if you read the paper carefully, which I did, there's no conflict of interest, which means the basic science researchers do not have an interest in a commercial company yet. So it's early. But you can be sure that this paper has already been picked up by industry, and assuming they've patented this thing already, someone's going to make a lot of money off of it.
Too bad it's not us.
Well, no, the other thing, speaking of other new things, you had told us a very interesting thing a while back about Latisse being able to grow hair on bald heads.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Have you found anything more about that since we're talking about new and important products?
I haven't seen anything yet. I haven't done a search, so maybe for next week I'll see where that is. But just, again, for the listeners, Latisse is a drug called bimatoprost. That's the actual name. It's a drug that affects prostaglandins. And when it's placed on the eyelids, eyelashes grow. And it was an accidental finding because it's also called Lumigon, which is a drug for glaucoma. So these drops were placed in patients' eyes, and lo and behold, their eyelashes grew. And you can just imagine, Mike, knowing the pharmaceutical industry like I'm sure you do, the pleasure on the faces of the people at Allergan to find this side effect, which is going to be bigger. Yeah, it's probably going to be a bigger market for the side effect than it was for the original drug, the side effect being eyelashes grow. So they figured out already that this will grow eyebrows and it will grow also hair on your head. And they did that in the, we talked about that about a month or two ago, about the hairless mice that then grew hair when this substance was applied. So go ahead.
My mom, she just started using it for her eyelashes, and they're so long, it's crazy. She, like, doesn't even wear mascara anymore.
It is crazy. These eyelashes, Mike, of women who have used Latisse have to be trimmed. They get so long.
Oh,
so
wow.
You really do have to. Yeah, you start every day with Latisse, and then once the growth begins, I tell my patients to go to every other night, and some even twice a week, and some even once a week. If you stop it completely, in a couple months, it'll revert back to what it was before. But you don't need it every night, and it becomes much less expensive also if you don't have to use, you know, an $85 a month drug every night. So,
yeah, but we
so
don't
Latisse,
have any
I'll give you
data,
a follow-up.
But we don't have any data on using it for bald heads.
Not in humans, but Mike, I
or
know
even
that you've done your
the
share
inner hair cells on your ears.
What's that?
Or even regrowing the hair inner ear cells.
That's an interesting thought. I don't know. Don't know anything about
when
that.
When we come back, but, we're going to talk about body dysmorphic condition, and then we have a real age tip of the week: peppermint oil proven to resolve upset stomachs. And we'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on RadioMD.com. Stay well. I must have missed the timing.
You tune up your car and change the oil when it's running sluggish, right? Well, then how come when you're feeling low and sluggish, you aren't doing something about it? D-Herbs can help with their full body cleanse or dozens of other healthy, all-natural supplements and products. It's time to finally do something for you. Take a look at D-Herbs quality all-natural products, and you get a free gift, famous D-Herbs all-natural, all-herbal cleansing tea, and an ebook with important life-changing information that you can download. It's called The Power of Cleansing. You can heal from any disease. Just go to freedherbs.com. That's free, the letter D, herbs.com, and claim your free herbal cleansing tea. You just pay a small shipping fee for that. And then you can download your free ebook on the wonders of healing cleansing. You'll also get a 15% off discount code if you should decide to make a purchase. Free gifts for you, plus a special gift of better health. freedherbs.com. freedherbs.com.
If you know the symptoms and get the facts, you'll know the signs of a heart attack. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if it sounds familiar, call 911.
Pain in your neck, chest,
arms, or jaw.
Shortness of breath,
please tell us more. Cold sweats and nausea, tiredness.
It's time to take it serious.
Back pain, stomach pain, shortness of breath.
cold sweats, nausea, dizzy necks. If you notice symptoms and heed the signs, you'll be around for a long, long time. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911.
Learn a song that could save your life. Get a free download at womenshealth.gov/heartattack.
Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911. If any sound familiar, call 911.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
I didn't think it was anything.
I had pain in my abdomen. It just wouldn't go away.
I was spotting, but I had already gone through menopause.
These symptoms may be nothing, but they could be early warning signs of a gynecologic cancer, such as cervical, ovarian, or uterine cancer.
Seeing my doctor probably saved my life.
Warning signs are not the same for everyone. If you think something's wrong, see your doctor. Ask about gynecologic cancer. Call 1-800-CDC-INFO for more information. A message from the Inside Knowledge Campaign and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This is Torticure, and it's more than just a bike ride. It's a celebration. It's where every turn of the pedal helps stop diabetes. Where cyclists of all levels come together to make a difference, to raise money, and to raise hope. It's the ride of your life. It's Torticure. Register today at diabetes.org/tour. That's diabetes.org/tour.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. Kids often test parental limits and rules, and sometimes parents decide enough is enough. That's when a timeout may be effective. Timeouts stop children from getting attention after they misbehave. Timeouts work best for children between the ages of 2 and 5, but can be effective for kids as old as 10 in some cases. A rule of thumb is 1 minute of timeout for every year of your child's age. For example, a 4-year-old would get a 4-minute timeout. Some guidelines for a timeout. Give the timeout immediately after the unacceptable behavior so your child knows why she's being disciplined. Explain clearly why the behavior was unacceptable. Calmly place your child in a quiet, boring, but secure place. If she gets up, quietly explain that her timeout isn't over and return her to her seat. When it is over, wipe the slate clean and remember to praise your child each time and every time she shows acceptable behaviors. With a minute for kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
And now back to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Here are the You Docs, Dr. Michael Roizen and Dr. Arthur Perry.
And Arthur, what is body dysmorphic condition?
Well, it's actually body dysmorphic disorder, Mike, and it is it's kind of an excessive concern with your image. Now, I know you don't have that, Mike, and Bridget,
all
I don't
you
know.
All you have to do is look at my hair.
Well, how many times a day do you look in the mirror, Bridget, and say to yourself, I'm very unhappy with my appearance? Hopefully none. But if you do...
Well, wait a second. Bridget, so I go 20 on a 0 to 10 scale. So it's
not
fair.
Oh, my God. That is such an exaggeration.
So anyway, Arthur, how many times would cause you to have body dysmorphic disorder?
Well, I don't know if there's an actual number on that, but there should be. But certainly, the way it's defined is if someone has a very minor problem, so that an objective observer does not think there's an issue with their appearance, but the patient, the person, thinks that they have an issue, that may be a symptom of body dysmorphic disorder. Also, if characteristic
Wait,
of these people might...
Do you think you have a problem?
Well, I have, like, earlier today I was showing my mom these two zits on the side of my face because I'm starting to break out, and I think it's a good example that I was freaking out about them, and she was like, I honestly would not have even noticed if you hadn't said anything to me, because I think
that doesn't qualify yet. I'll tell you if it qualifies. The way it would qualify as a body dysmorphic disorder is if you become impaired by that. If you look at yourself and what seemingly is a minor thing to your mother or Dr. Roizen or your colleagues, it's so minor that they hardly notice it, but you do things to try and fix it, like have surgery or cover your face.
No.
Or stay in your house or get depressed or something like that. So
no,
it's a psychiatric condition.
Sometimes when I'm trying on clothes, I'll ask my sister a few too many times if I look fat in an outfit. And she'll be like, oh, my God, I'm not telling you again. You don't look fat. No.
I don't think that qualifies.
That's normal, though, right? For women, I think.
Yeah.
I'll speak.
It's pretty normal.
Okay.
Yeah. But body dysmorphic disorder, there's a study that was published in our journal this month, and they looked at rhinoplasty patients. And rhinoplasty patients are those who are concerned with the appearance of their nose, right? And if you think about people in general, there are plenty of people that walk around with pretty non-attractive noses. That's a politically correct way to say that, right? and they couldn't care less about their nose. They could, and in fact, there are many people, even on television, mostly men, who do not have great noses and really don't care. And then there are people with attractive noses that have a very, very minor issue, and they're absolutely consumed with it. Again, that's a symptom of body dysmorphic disorder. So the study looked at 166 rhinoplasty patients and 100 patients that came in for medical issues through an otolaryngologist, meaning like an ear infection or something like that. And they compared the satisfaction with their, you know, with people's appearance. And certainly the rhinoplasty patients were much, much, much more likely to have those symptoms of body dysmorphic disorder. And so the message is, it's something we kind of knew in plastic surgery, that we have a selected population of patients with a psychiatric disorder.
Yeah.
Truly a psychiatric disorder. And it's extremely important that the plastic surgeon figure out who those patients are, because if you operate on someone with body dysmorphic disorder, they are not going to be happy, and it's almost a definition of the disorder. They will not be happy because that's not the problem.
It's like that girl from The Hills, you know, Heidi, whatever, that was all over the tabloids because she had like 20 procedures.
Heidi Montag.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I'm not sure she qualifies. Celebrities are kind of a different group of people because their income clearly depends on their appearance. And that might have been more bad judgment than body dysmorphic disorder, so I don't know for a fact. But certainly every plastic surgeon has seen his share or her share of body dysmorphic disorder patients. And it's very, very important that they be identified. And, you know, there was a survey done by plastic surgeons, Mike, that you would be interested in. It turns out that 30% of plastic surgeons said even if the patient had body dysmorphic disorder, they would operate on them, which is amazing to me.
Wow.
Because they're asking for trouble. They're asking for unhappy patients. And, you know, you wonder, is that just bad judgment or greed? I don't know the answer.
Well, it's at least one of those.
Yeah, you know.
It's either bad judgment or greed. I mean, it's one of those two. It's not some other emotion or other quality. Arthur, we've got to go to the tip of the week now. And did you know that peppermint oil is proven to resolve upset stomachs? Don't you love it when science solves the mystery of a long-time-honored home remedy? You know, most home remedies, I think, there's an essence of truth, a key point of truth, and we just got to find out what it is. Well, it happened again, and to one of our favorite digestion soothers, peppermint. Turns out that this ancient herbal tummy tamer does its thing. Try saying tummy tamer twice in a row. Tummy tamer does its thing. I can't remember what I was going to say. Now I got it. By switching off pain-sensing nerve fibers in your digestive system. So it turns off your pain from your stomach and intestine. That help explains why pouring yourself a steaming mug of peppermint tea from an upset stomach or popping an enteric-coated peppermint oil capsule to ease irritable bowel syndrome really does work. We've known for a while that mint relaxes smooth muscle in your GI tract, which can tone down IBS cramps. That's super useful if you're among the 1 in 5 people with an uncomfortable problem. Now we know it can mute super hypersensitive nerves, which can trigger internal distress after a spicy meal, too much coffee, a glass of wine, or during a bout of flu. Peppermint tea may be all it takes to soothe a queasy stomach or settle one that's gassy and bloated. But it may take a stronger dose to ease IBS. That's where peppermint oil capsules come in. To give them a try, stick with 0.2 to 0.4 milliliters of oil 3 times daily and use only enteric-coated versions to avoid heartburn. Otherwise, the muscle-relaxing oil could relax a valve at the top of your stomach, allowing acid to wash back into your esophagus. That'll hurt you rather than help you. Tip, if you're heartburn-prone, skip mint chewing gum for the same reason. And that's the Real Age tip of the week. Arthur, have you ever used peppermint?
Arthur, how about Pepto-Bismol? Does that count?
I don't think so. This is the Owner's Manual Radio Show. We'll be back again next week with a brand new show. Hope you are too. Thanks to Bridget, Sonar for great engineering, Donna for great producing, Arthur, Gary Ginsberg, our guest, Dr. Weber, and of course, Joe Galuski. This is Mike Roizen. Please listen next week.
Hi, this is Melanie Cole, show host here at Radio MD and a mother of two. I want parents to know about Great Start Life Insurance offered by Guarantee Trust Life Insurance Company. Great Start ensures the future insurability of your children. Now, what does that mean? Too often, people will get an illness or an injury at some point in their lives that afterwards can preclude them from receiving life insurance, and that can cause a lot of problems. But by insuring your children now with the Great Start Plan, the insurance that grows with your children, they'll already be insured regardless of future illness or injury. Find out all about the great benefits of the Great Start Plan. Go to GreatStartGTL.com and see for yourself why Great Start is, well, a great start for your kids. Peace of mind at GreatStartGTL.com. That's GreatStartGTL.com. For the Great Start Plan, go to GreatStartGTL.com.
Plan not available in all states. Life insurance underwritten by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company, Glenview, Illinois.
Sometimes people buy cookies as a gift for us to send to our soldiers. They tell us it reminds them of home.
Emily is one of thousands of Girl Scouts who will send cookies to troops stationed overseas.
Children shouldn't have to take abuse because they aren't strong enough to escape it. I want to give them a helping hand.
Alicia uses proceeds from her cookie sales to provide mentoring programs at a shelter in her community.
Selling Girl Scout cookies has taught me how to manage money, be responsible, and talk to other people.
Tanya wants to go to business school and hopes to run her own company someday.
On a visit to the food bank, I learned that in this economy, more and more people need help to feed their families.
Morgan and other Girl Scouts are starting a project to help get food to those who need it most. Every Girl Scout cookie has a mission, to help girls do great things. Find your cookies now at GirlScoutCookies.org.